Hey guys, how are you doing? Very glad to have back with us, very popular guest and very well received during our end of year when he spoke a number of equities regarding the potential diesel shortage that was coming in. Chris McIntosh. Chris, glad to have you back. How are you doing?
Good to be back, mate. Good. Good. Let's get
into it.
We've got lots to talk about.
Indeed. We had a pre-chat and now we don't know almost where to kick off. You put two guys like me and Chris together in a pub and a couple of pints, and I think you can come back in a week's time. But anyway, where do we start? Is there an escalation in this military conflict coming? And what's it going to mean for the equities? And the diesel shortage, let's, I suppose, carry a little bit on from where we finished, which was such an interesting concept. And you even mentioned oiliers, shipping, and the fertilizer as a number of areas. How does an escalation in this military potential, say Poland, Belarus, Dragon?
It's like, let's go back and think about what it means, right? Because at the end of the day, you want to have some takeaways as to, you can talk all day about what may or may not happen. At a macro level, basically what we're dealing with, and you mentioned this in the pre-chat, is huge stagflation, right? And what people are, here's one of the things that I think is critical. So I'll say this at the start now, so that if people get bored and they jump off, then they don't miss it. And it's this: there's going to be certain sectors that are going to be doing very well, and other sectors that are going to be essentially deflationary. If we think about, you got like the financial economy, this relies on interest rates. So this economy is totally fucked. This is where you're going to have a recession. It's private equity, it's VC, it's tech, it's your fire economy, finance, insurance, real estate. All of those things are... because now retail is actually, it's part of the consumer credit. It's not consumer spend, it's consumer credit. So basically, anything in that space there, as rates go up, they're fucked. So so when people say, oh, we're going to have a, deflationary, we're worried about the stock market and da 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 da. Yeah, you should be. I mean, I have clients come to me and they go, I'm worried about the stock market. Are you? And I'm like, yeah. And they go, what are you investing in? I go, the stock market. But then if you look at the stuff that is being actually curtailed in supply, your commodity space, the precious metals for different reasons, certainly the energy space, all of these things have been signaling for a long time and they're going to continue to go higher. And we haven't even mentioned the, handing out stimmy checks and all sorts of other sort of nonsense. But basically it's like you've got real world economy and then you've got this nominal world that we've been living in, right? And that's coming to an end, along with the bond market. So, and subsequently, all of the obligations that come with it. So, the largest component, that's the Western world, where they've subcontracted everything out, and you've just got your pensions are handled, and your health care, and your transport date, like everything, right? And they want to collapse that. They're actively collapsing it now with the intention they're going to flip it and give you UBI as a little crumb off of the table to keep the SERPs happy. It's not going to work for starters. Just like communism doesn't work. The question is how much pain you go through and for what extended period of time and so on and so forth. So in this environment, the best thing that you can do is to be invested in hard assets. Don't get caught up, and there's going to be huge volatility in it, as we've seen. But the other thing is, even in, there's plenty subsectors within the space that are still extraordinarily cheap. I'll give you a quick example. So last year we started the year in crude with what, 75? And where did we end? 75? Basically it went nowhere. In that time frame, one of the sectors that we've been very bullish on has been offshore drillers. Our offshore drillers are up over 50% for the year. So that's an indication of your subsector. When oil goes to 150, 200, then you've got a dynamic that really kicks in. and there's an inability to bring additional supply on. In many, and that's using that as an example, but there's tons of them. As part of the woke ESG rot, part of it is sanctioning to various geopolitical entities around the world, and where, you know, who's allowed to do what and where, and you know, so all of these things are extraordinarily inflationary as a consequence of supply destruction and as a consequence of messing around with supply chains.
So I'd interject on that. You mentioned Putin spoke recently. You just finished watching him. And inside of that, we're talking about a very high likelihood of a further escalation in the military complex. So imagine those offshore drillers when we go full retard on the war in Poland and Belarus get involved, because people have become too comfortably numb outside of the, you know, the direct nations affected with this war, because we don't feel it, we don't see it, it's a TV concept. Okay, there's some people, you know, doing this thing. The next shock is this escalation, and imagine what that's going to do for demand on oil, because wars run on oil, don't they?
You can't have, and I've said it a million times and I'll say it again, you don't have any political security if you don't have energy security.
Yeah.
And Saudi just actually came out with this where they, because there's pressures on them to, you know, reduce. It's funny, you know, they're like, oh, we want you to increase supply because we need some oil. And then in the same, literally in the same week, they're coming out saying, well, no, you know, we need you to, you know, spend more money on renewables. It's like, well, which one is it? Yeah. Anyways, they came out with a statement saying that it's political insecurity as a consequence of lack of energy is a big problem. And it's something that they're, and this is Saudi. I mean, that's not like they're the big boy on the block. And so this realization is, it's been there for a long time. Let's be clear. But it hasn't been making it into the mainstream media. And because it hasn't made it into the mainstream media, as a consequence, it hasn't been priced in the markets. You know, it's still shocking to me how many fund managers will be sitting in Western jurisdictions. And to your point, it hasn't hit them. And it's just a TV concept. And This is not the TV concept of past years. This is not Iraq. This is not Afghanistan. This is not South Sudan. This is a big, big deal. And it's coming to all. I can't see any place that escapes the consequences of this. Some are better than others, but ultimately this is going to be something that is going to be felt globally and at scale. And you know, this isn't even a matter of trying to make a whole lot of money. This is a survival trade. If you want to survive this, you've got to wake up. But yes, to your point, escalation.
Because Putin has described that escalation that he sees coming as an existential threat. In other words, the mere existence of Russia as a nation is under threat. And you have the likes of Newland and various other mega hawks that are all Zio pigs talking about they want to not only assassinate Putin, they want the structural dismantling of the country into broken up into little pieces. You're talking about an absolute draconian dominate. So he's talking about an existential threat that he's going to fight tooth and nail to protect. And funny enough, just as a sidebar that's not directly related, both Saudi and Iran, apparently South Africa has leaked that they both want to become members. I think that's an openish enough secret of the BRICS pairing. So the unveiling of the petrodollar and the continual unwinding of that, whilst you're going into a potential major escalation for one country that's been threatened on its right to even exist through an overreaching NATO with a reluctant Europe being dragged along. I mean, just imagine that as it's kind of an unbelievable cocktail. I mean, it's War of the Worlds, it's World War III, all the things we used to talk about as little kids almost. And it seems like we're going to live that. We're going to live that now. And on the one hand, you've got this consumer retail recession. And then you've got this arms race boom. Putin stated he's preparing for 30 months of war, night and day. The factories are running, the ammos are churning out, the bullets, the cannons, the tanks. He's got everything running at full tilt. He's preparing for a fight to the death, you know, to maintain the existence of the Russian state. So you actually got a boom industry in the military industrial complex. It's almost like with the farmer had its go, and now it's got to be with the likes of Lockheed, Raytheon, and the gang. Talk to us on that, and how do people, if you're not serving these boom industries that are all dark states?
Well, look, yeah, philosophically, I can't bring myself to buying Lockheed or Raytheon. You don't serve evil. I have no interest. It's just like I was unprepared to buy into the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah,
I won't send them my money. And you could see that they were going to profit. Of course they were going to profit. No,
yeah.
I'm not sending my money there. So fine, if you want to do that, knock yourself out. But it's the consequences of these actions and how it affects other industries where I find the asymmetry. And so from an investment standpoint, that's where we're focused on. The other thing that I'll just make a point, because you're mentioning, you know, this is a fight to the death for Putin. What people need to understand as well, yeah, is this. If Russia goes, the next in line is India and China, and they understand that. So this is not, you know, it's a funny, you know, I'm in the gym here, and I bloody run CNN on the TV, and I see this thing, and it says, Russia's war on Ukraine. And I'm like, you know what, you could easily put up a title saying, the United States' war on Russia.
Yeah. So it's more accurate.
More accurate. Yeah. And so when you understand that there's no ways that the Chinese and the Indians can let Russia fall, you understand that this is World War III on a kinetic level. At the same time, we've got all the other fuckery that's going on with respect to citizens of the world who have been poisoned, and the ramifications of that going forward are yet to be found, although we have some inclinations as to what that might be, cancers and all sorts of things going forward. In fact, I'm just writing about it now. So I've got from the New Zealand data website, from their own health website. I'll read this out to you. And I'm jumping around here, but
hello, go ahead.
Let me quickly get the actual. So I've got the actual numbers. You can literally go onto their website, and if you go in there and you select COVID-19 deaths, and then you filter by jab status, the best that you could hope for is if you're young, under 50 years of age, which is always the case anyway, so that's not a surprise. If you're fully vaccinated, so that's two shots, you're clearly worse off. Here's the thing, if you got boosted with a safe and effective juice, you're not going to like these numbers. So if you're 0 to 59-year-olds, you have 3 times the likelihood of having a coincidence. If you're 60 to 69-year-olds, you're 5 times as likely to suffer from having an omelet. If you're 70 to 79-year-olds, it's 7 times. 80 to 89 is 8.6. And 90 plus is a 9 times. Now, remember, those numbers are shocking as they are. And that's now. That's off of their own data. Do we, you know, and people will know this. What's the biggest death cause in the Western world now? Cause unknown. So this doesn't include cause unknown.
I was about to say the stats are bad. So it's worse than that.
Cause unknown, you know, which we've never ever had before, ever. Or, well, it's been a rounding in decimal point. It's now the biggest cohort of all of them. If you were to take, you could be conservative and just take 50% of that. I haven't done the numbers, but they're as horrific as they are without that. We're looking at serious numbers. Now, you can say, okay, what's that? Well, that's deflationary, right? It's demand destruction at the same time. So we got demand destruction across the world. So a call it a soft war, if you want. Then you've got the kinetic war going on. And these guys are playing for keeps, man. At the same time that on a macro level, we have the tail end of the bond super bull market, which is now in the process of collapsing. And everything that's tied to that, the fire economy, has been absolutely bid through the fucking roof to valuations that make no sense, even though they're down, because what's a Spurs is down 18, NASDAQ was what, 30 last year, something like that. Even though we've had that sort of pullback in some of these overvalued equities, we've got a long, long way to go on that front, right? So it feels like it's kind of easy to know where to be invested with respect to sectors. But I think what the most difficult part of all of this to be actually to kind of navigate is the geopolitical risk in terms of where are you going to get sanctioned? If you place your capital in X, is there something going to come along that says, no, Francis, you're not allowed to be doing that, bad boy. And so you get it right and it can be profitable and everything else. You, depending on your jurisdiction, where your brokerage accounts are held, your passport you carry, all these sorts of things become very, very... And that in itself is just the curtailment of supply chains. It's a curtailment of capital that flows around the world. And as it gets...
Freedom of movement of capital, freedom of people. Yeah.
All of those things are super stagflationary, hyper stagflationary. And yeah. So my belief, and this has been for some time, is we move and are moving very quickly into a Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Incidentally, those particular asset classes that fit into that are also, on a relative and absolute basis, the cheapest they've been in decades and decades. So if we're talking food, energy, resources. So, that's kind of my viewpoint at the moment.
And there's also that concern around their involvement in capture of a lot of that. So why would they have all these chickens killed, this egg inflation, this farmland being bought up by Gates, stroke, BlackRock, Vanguard, criminal of choice? It seems, you know, when they use that euphemism in a corporation, we're going to right size. Never was expanding. It was always about cutting heads. And I get this whole feeling the planet is being right-sized. They're both right-sizing the supply chain by bifurcating it and also right-sizing the demand that would have caused the extreme inflation on that supply chain by the coal that dare not be mentioned for want of YouTube. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know if you have a comment on this, but I'll share this image just quickly of this map that showed this Ohio toxicity event, which some people have described as verging on a mini Chernobyl, and its location. And the one problem, the events of March 2020 that shall not be named, is that you have a control group in the Amish that are showing rude health and vitality and popularly answered, why are you not affected by the flu? And they said, we don't have TVs. You might remember that one. Well, it's interesting that the app name Palestine is caught in between perfectly in the middle here of the two deepest densities of Amish concentration. One of the largest control groups untouched by the great experiment is the caption there. And it's kind of interesting. There also was, ironically, I'll add just around these events now and take you into the deep weeds, I suppose, more similar. But there was an interesting movie called White Noise that actually is the entire town of East Palestine doing exactly a movie of exactly this thing. Material hazards made in 2022 on a train, being hit by a truck, being set alight, every single eventuality, this plume of smoke that looked like a global cancer growth, and I use that word for all the reasons. And of course, what I'm expecting is that we're going to get carcinogens everywhere, people showing up, oncology is going to be the next boom for our friends in the military industrial complex of pills, Pharmaland, and they don't want a particular completely out of the control group people not to be affected, because it seems there's been benign neglect the president in chief is over to in Ukraine, some 4,700 miles away, and not visiting his own backyard where there's crisis.
And they refused to send support. Did you see the state asked the Fed for support and they refused.
And the guy overseeing it, the government guys, went the cheap route that gave permission for it to be burnt, which is what creates the extreme toxicity as well, instead of a more expensive option that would have contained the toxicity.
Here's going global. We have across our continent, the African continent, the same or somewhat of the same control group. How do you deal with that? Well, we have massive constraints with respect to global food supply, because remember, this is an entire continent that imports food. There's a whole different story around that, why that is, and that's basically, you know, the IMF don't lend money in order for these countries to produce food to feed their own populace. Aside from them lending the money purely for debt surf purposes, it is also to create an export-driven economy so that the West gets fed. These people, despite all of their protestations to the contrary, they are not there to help. So that's coming. That's an issue with respect to food security. But it doesn't deal with the cancer side of things and the statistics that one will be able to derive from that. And we're not talking about one small region like you have in the US with the Amish community. You're talking about countries and, in fact, an entire continent.
That's largely not taking the insect bites, yeah.
Yeah.
And how will they hide that, which when you have an entire continent is another story. They'll blame it on racism and not making the poison more regularly available. I don't know. It's a massive control group, isn't it?
And I'm not sure that they anticipated that it would be as unsuccessful as it has been.
Yep, and they tried their... No, sorry, carry on.
Presumably they figured that they would do what they've always done before, which is $20 million in a brown paper bag to the right people and everything just runs. You get done what you want to get done. But the people basically just went, yet, not happening. In fact, stepping out of the medicine side of things, if we look at the financial side, what we're seeing now with central bank digital currencies, and we've seen in Kenya, they tried that, it failed, nobody wanted it, and now they're doubling down. They're absolutely doubling down. They're doing similar to what they did in India. They're just shoehorning that bad boy in there.
Nigeria, e-Naira. And they took all the big notes, just like India, as you said, out of circulation with the e-Naira. Now the guys are burning the banks. They don't have the cash. So they actually just reduced. The effective money supply is cash notes to most lay person that are non-digital. And they've just shrunk the effective money supply immensely by taking out the big notes. And that's why they're burning banks and they're rioting. But people getting highly positive about, well, it's good to see pushback. And I do celebrate the pushback, but they don't care. They'll shoot on the citizens. If they burn any buildings of any meaning, like politicians, they'll shoot on them.
If they need to, they'll bring in Boston Dynamics robot dogs or drones. Honestly.
I do think that's what they have. Everyone with the cute dog and all of this, I'm like, this is drones and robotics. This is your enforcement agent of choice. It's going to have multi-cameras. It's going to have soulless kids behind the counter and they're going to come and pick you off. That's why gaming is such a good stuff.
It doesn't even need to be soulless kids, Francis. It doesn't even need to be soulless kids. It can just be a track and trace that gets implemented by an algorithm based on your social credit score, whatever, right? Data harvesting implemented via an algorithm synced with instructions to drones, robot dogs. It doesn't even need to have an individual behind it. It's basically you can have an individual and all he's doing is programming.
Yeah.
He doesn't even see the end results of that program. That human reaction, because it's not a natural thing to hurt another human being. It's not. And you go back to, I haven't had a fight in since I was in probably primary school. But, you know, when you're going to punch another guy in the face, it's not a normal thing. It's not something that just comes naturally.
No.
And then, of course, you take it to a level that's far more extreme than just a bunch of children in the playground having a box up. When you disassociate that human element, forget about it. Forget about it.
Yeah.
So the only thing that I can think about now is, because look, it's yin and yang. There is balance in the universe. That's what we've got to remember. This is a level of control, absolute control, that is so extraordinary. It is almost like the one ring that rules them all, you know? As a consequence, not everybody's going to just sign up for it. People and individuals and corporate interests and governments and everything around that is actually going to fight. Because if you lose this, you will be completely dominated. So that's a relative good thing, insofar as, to my way of thinking, it's better to have a decentralized bunch of sociopaths than a centralized one sociopath.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The problem is, I think they want you to think that it's decentralized, but the top sociopath is coordinating all the localized ones. So you have a fake scenario where you think you can arbitrage away by movements, and you end up running into the same monster in a different terrain. And that's the problem. In terms of capital, bringing it back more with an investment feature, it'll go out in the market, Sniper. What do people do to best preserve themselves from the counterparty risk and to build profit and in ways that will still survive? Equities will survive, surely, and equities and commodities will survive. Is that a starting point?
Okay, yeah. So look, broad equities, I don't see it actually as being that dangerous. And we just talked about them being overvalued and da 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 da. Everything becomes relative. Okay. So in an environment where you're losing faith in, especially in bonds and hence currency, because remember, bonds is long dated currency.
Yeah.
Then what is it that you want to own? It's better off owning equities, basically. So it's part of this is knowing where not to be. Okay. So if we start with where not to be, it's in fixed income of all nature. Then you're drilling down into equities, it's better, but not all equities are the same. So you've got your tech growth company, Silicon Valley, you know, Facebook, that kind of stuff. Forget about it. It's all predicated on growth, and it was all predicated on numbers that we're just going to continue up the wazoo into infinity. We have not yet got them back to even rational levels. And basically, we're going to go, everything reverts past the mean, right? The mean is just there, but everything reverts past it. So that's where we're not to be.
Can I make some comments on that? Because that's such an important opening statement as well, because we're going to drill down further on that. I was chatting with Mark Farber last night, and he said he's allocated some money to bonds. And I can see in a demand 25%, the cash, gold, bonds, and equities. And I ruled out debt instruments after the events of COVID. I said, that's the top, they're at the lowest rates. This is a turning, a 40-year bull market is over. And I treat going into that area as a potential for more downside risk. If they go jubilee, they lock up the old money and they bottleneck and only some things come through and that withers on the vine, and they release their new money in the new world, because the debt can't be carried through into the new system. That's part of the reason.
They've
got to get it. So it's going to become the old money. So that asset that you think, which is a liability that can never be paid in truth, is going to diminish to zero in my longer term worldview. But I can also see, as a trader and a short medium term, if we have the demand destroying event that the Fed's belligerence is implying, those things will rally in value and the yields will come down again. But I've just refused to play in it. And on the basis it's picking up 5-cent pieces in the fast lane of the Autobahn. the downside is not worth the reward. But I think that's a key thing. And I've just made it a doctrine. And I like how you said it as well. It seems we're very similar minded on that. Just don't do the debt. But that people will come and tell you you were wrong. When a demand destroying event comes, debt will rally, but it will never go to the highs it once went. And
no,
it will not, it will disappoint if you have expectations, and the reversion will be even stronger and we will probably go higher. And what he did say as well, which was interesting, is that people are underprepared. You could have higher interest rates than even in the 80s. So you could start to see more of a Zimbabwe in all of this. So when debt loses its value and we have this hyperstagflation that's ongoing and more people realize debt has no value, the rates can go properly out of control and you can go post Volcker highs, pre, you know, beyond. So he recognizes the long-term reluctance on that. I just thought that was a really interesting segue. So both us, you and I, have made a commitment that we just don't want to play there, but that doesn't mean it can't go up in the debt.
And the same is true of any of these markets. I mean, look, you can be bullish on commodities and it doesn't mean that there's not an intermediate short-term deflationary impact, a liquidity-driven event that pulls capital out of these sectors into short-term treasuries or into whatever. So, but look, I'm not here to trade. You're a good trader. I'm not a trader. I don't. My viewpoint, I look out like 5 years out and I say, you know what? Where do I need to be for 5 years? And I'm going to be given positioning for that and then, yeah, and then make adjustments along the way. That's how we run our portfolio. So with that in mind, there's absolutely no reason at all that one should own bonds on that sort of time horizon. Yes, we're going to have some, but and then you just accept the volatility that's going to come, both in the longs and in the shorts, if you've got shorts. So, and we're not short the bond market, but you could argue that you're synthetically shorted by being long the alternative. So, and for me, that's an easier trade to be made. And so, because emotion, you know, this game is an emotional game more than anything else. And what you have when people are short, of course, is you've got time frames, right? You're either using options, which means you've got your expiry dates, or you're using futures, which has also kind of got the leverage component within it. And that's just, most people don't actually have, they think they do, but they don't have the mental fortitude to actually do that consistently at scale and be profitable. That's the reality, is most people don't have that. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying that's the reality behind that trade. And as a consequence, well, for me, it's not my gig. But so you stay away from that stuff. You then are along basically Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There's tangential stuff within it, you know, because what you look at is where the absolute critical supply constraints exist, where the valuations are at extremes. And then you also look at the second order effects of these particular types of industries. So you could, there's a lot of little holes that you can go digging down into subsectors within, say, the energy space or shipping or whatever. So, but you know, you don't have to get too complex around stuff. It's basically broadly long commodities, energy in particular. And then also try and make sure that you're going to be geographically diversified, because we're in this geopolitical fracturing and deglobalization phase. And as we're seeing, there's all sorts of political machinations coming through, which are they're going to impact potentially your particular investments. You buy a company and then it gets sanctioned and they can't. And they have to divest of assets or whatever the case might be. But keep in mind, when that happens, that in itself on a macro scale is just more destruction of supply and or higher costs of getting whatever that particular commodity is that is behind their company to market. And the one thing that human nature has proven to us, and you and I would know this growing up in Africa and looking at some of the shit show that typically has taken place on that wonderful continent for years, is that people find a way. People find a way around capital controls, and that's an arbitrage. And the greater the arbitrage, the greater the profitability. And so what, every time you see these sorts of constraints coming in, you're just seeing more arbitrage availability. So the way to manage a portfolio then is to make sure that you are geographically diversified and keep your bloody eye on the ball. Because you don't want to be the guy that gets the sector right and you bought one or two companies. And yeah, for whatever reason, they fall foul of the regulators or the whatever. And the next thing you know, they're sanctioned and, you know, or you're locked up and you've got no liquidity on your stock or whatever the case might be. This is just the reality of the world that we're in. And there isn't any ability to escape risk. You can only manage it.
Yeah, that's exactly the truth. That was a great statement. I flashed Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Many people are not familiar with it, but it starts with the basic shelter, food layer. And then you go up into the more spiritual self-actualization top levels. And I think when Chris and I refer to that, we're saying how we're going to go back down to having to need more of the basics at the base level, food, shelter.
They'll become the most valuable of all of those things, you know.
The pyramid inverts. Instead of becoming statusful and showing the flash car and the fancy gold ring and all of that, that will become less meaningful and being a provider of the basics, good, comfortable shelter, safety, security,
and
food.
And I'll make one other comment on that. I mentioned this in a weekly the other week. One of the most critical components in that is actually your community.
Yes.
No, it's not in there because think about this. As human beings, when we're ostracized, we actually are physically hurt. If you look at suicide rates exist and are much, much higher in people with depression who don't have, basically don't have a sense of community. That is why they utilize, that's why lockdowns are one of those tools that were utilized to subvert the populace. It's why in prison they put people in solitary confinement. Right.
Yeah. Okay, and all suicides will invariably be isolated people and can often take a while to be found because nobody is watching. So indefinitely having social warmth and like-minded around you. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, homogeneity is your strength, not diversity. You want people that think like that which we're discussing. And that's not a race. It's not an ethnicity. It's a choice of liberty and freedom. And
it could be black, white, pink, or brown.
Yeah.
Girl or boy, doesn't matter. But
yeah, as long as you're committed in that space and then you're like-minded, you'll have great neighbors who've got your back and you are all aware that there are hostile forces and you're watching. And that is immensely, and that's how I would choose to go out. I don't know if we can fight this machine. I think they run the whole communism and they run it globally. Don't forget, we all talk about it being a failure because we're talking from our own frame of reference. The people that'll be lording it off and living off the slave encampment off the entire planet, they'll be living like absolute lords. They'll be having their life extended, all the science, your tax and extending their lives and making sure you don't get any of it. And those that are looking a bit too healthy get some imported medicine and poison pills and poison injections to deal with non-threatening diseases. So that's a great success for them, especially if you don't need labor on the same scale anymore and you've got robotics and drones and everything. So I unfortunately think they've gone too far and that it's a game where they're winning 6-0. As I said to you before we spoke, and you're playing Real Madrid and you've had five of your players sent off and there's 5 minutes to midnight. You know, it's there's injury time only left.
To throw a positive tone into this, if there's something...
No, I'm having fun. More black.
If there's, please. If there's something that is going to end this or at least impact it negatively on it, their side, it is extraordinary hubris. So it's a bit like the tortoise and the hare story, you know. The hare thinks he's got it made by because he's just fucking winning. He's a fucking hare, and in his hubris he loses. But we've seen this many times before. You can have extraordinary mistakes made just as a consequence of being overly ambitious and overly confident in your own skills and your own everything else. You know, I've seen it in my life. I've seen it in business partners and all sorts of things. So, you know, that's worth considering. And maybe it's just, maybe it's just me sitting here, you know, looking to the gods, looking for some positivity. But it is true in nature. It is true in history. Whether it'll be true in this instance, we don't know. But it is something that certainly, when I look at the absolute nonsense that's coming out, they are just throwing shit in our faces at the moment and laughing at us. It is
mockery.
You've used the word mockery, and you're correct. Now that is just a level of hubris that is extraordinary, and that's a dangerous place to be in. You and I have been in the markets for years, and you and I both know, as soon as you think you've got all your shit together is exactly when you're going to get, market's going to come around and spank you, and teach you another bloody lesson. So you've got to be very humble.
Yes. You know, in the analogy of me and you thinking we've worked out what the market's going to do next, I absolutely agree. In terms of these guys in the state of capture, they do have grounds for hubris on the basis that they have hammered us.
I can't see that.
That doesn't mean that won't be some possibility of some slip-ups and some things, but they just seem to have run such a good capture of so much, so efficiently. Media, I mean, and the whole cultural subversion, inversion, and the things that are being put out there at the moment are an active provocation. It's almost, they're provoking the reaction they want, and they're almost upset that the people are so peaceful and law-abiding, they haven't got the right-wing cult that they can exterminate yet, that they've already got their pre-plan for, you know.
The robot dogs, they got the FEMA camps.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, nah, we're okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. We're waiting for some pushback here. We've already got our plans and our contingency that's going to take all our favorite troublemakers out, like you and me, Chris. We'll be in Block H or whatever. And the guys just aren't even, so it's like, more provocation, please. They're simply so docile. Can we kick them in the balls? How about we put out that Silverman ADL woman, and she can tell some jokes about molesting kids, which actually happened. And there she goes. There she says what she says, and everybody like retweets it and says, look at what these people are all about. And then everyone just carries on.
Everyone just carries on.
Basically,
the pushback, and I think this is as a consequence of social media. People will go on social media and yell at the sky, thinking that that's doing something.
Yeah, I've said this. Social media is a great primal scream room for people that never hit at their enemies and go into the basement, get locked up in the concrete bumper, hit a punch bag and scream and yell blue murder and come back out. And in terms of pushback to the bully, it's done absolutely nothing. You've just dealt with your impotence and your lack of real physical fight back. But that's the problem. And they're so good at Trojanizing. I'd love to be more active in the fight back myself, but I'm not going to be standing in front of Changs and throwing myself under the wheel. But the point is, they'll even Trojanize. Let's talk some politics. DeSantis. I was just saying how he's the cultivated, no injection special word that we may not say on YouTube, carrier, so that he can be created as this new beacon of fake hope again. Every election, their goal is to create a new hope and change candidate, you know, and this guy's going to be the guy, you know, as if he'll be anti-Israel, anti-NATO war expansion, anti all these things. And within like 3 months of being voted as elected as the Republican candidate, let's say wins the election against Sleepy Joe, if Joe were to run again, or that other idiot vice president, whoever, you'll end up exactly where the same place, because voting has never got you out of anything.
Putin had an interview from probably 10 years ago, I remember, where he sat down with some Western, I can't remember who exactly, it might have been even the BBC. And he stated, he said, you know, the reason that in the West, these politicians come in And they tell you that they're going to do X, Y, Z. And he said, and they probably believe it. But as soon as they get in, a couple of men will come in dark suits, sit down and tell them how it all works. And then it doesn't. And then whatever it is that they promised doesn't happen. And he talked about, I think he talked about Obama and Guantanamo Bay. How he had promised that he was going to shutter it and da, 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 da. Never happened. So that's the idea of democracy that most people have is completely flawed. It is a elected leaders are either elected by the corporate interests or presented forward and then allowed. It's like, okay, here's the selection of guys that you can vote for, but we've got the ball at the back.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You could, take your pick. And so it's either that, or if in the odd event that something disrupts that process, then you have like with the ditch of Nixon or JFK.
Yeah. If you get any thoughts of independence and believing you have any real power, here's what we'll do. Tell us a bit about Dubai as someone as a specialist in it, as an area for copping out. So people that want to bug out, there'll be capital formation that's going to take place in Dubai. It's already Western friendly. It's safe, but it's also got a bit of a dark and more sinister side. How does it work? How should, our kind of people, Westerners?
Yeah. Look, from that perspective, it's very easy to assimilate. Yeah, the language is English. The culture is... It's fine, right? There's no Westerner would come here and feel at all. You might not like the scenery, or there might be other things like that you like, but by and large, it's a very easy sort of assimilation. But this place is interesting because it's, if you go back to the history of the Emiratis, they're traders. The Arabs in general are traders, and that's all that they're doing. And they're also peacemakers. They don't want to get involved in any sorts of conflicts or anything like that. So they're always going to be somewhat placating, but they're also pretty foxy. I mean, you talk about like Russian money. I mean, the Russian money is pouring in here. It's absolutely pouring in here, amongst other places, by the way. And people talk a lot about the Russian money, but, on my floor, there's... I've just met three English guys and wealthy businessmen. They're all coming here for the exact same reasons. Some of them are a little more awake than others, but this is not unique to a Russian. There's a war on that. Money in Western Europe has figured this out, and it's seeking shelter. And this is one of the spots that is providing shelter, and that's gonna.
On that point, Britain raised tax on corporations from February 19% to 25%, 6%, that's over 30%. I'll just drop that in. So why have a British corporation if you can have a Dubai-based one?
If you're in the business to, if you have the ability to not have a physically located business, it makes zero sense. And even if you have a physically located business, I mean, I went out with a client the first night I was here, and he does a whole lot of logistics into the Africa, and he does it through a corporate entity in Europe, but everything then gets centralized here in Dubai and then shipped. And so even though he's got a very physical type of business, it's manufacturing of parts for trains and things of that description, this is a hub for him to actually manage, distribute, assemble and do a whole lot of other things. And so that's just going to, as you have more and more restrictions placed in the West, more higher tax and everything else, it forces capital out. It forces it out to the next best jurisdictions, and this is one of them. So,
and Western Europe and America is doing that. It's forcing failure. This is why I keep asserting it's a controlled demolition. In actual fact, I didn't like Truss or her finance minister, who were the shortest pair of politicians in the UK. She didn't even get to get her name on the letterhead, I don't think. The actual process of pursuing a growth economy and actually running the overdraft, a deficit, was actually the right idea. And it was the Bank of England that caused the disaster by not upping rates at the same rate as America, so that the bond market was less attractive in pounds than it was in America, in an environment where money was now seeing a turn in the debt markets. So you had they should have upped rates quicker. In the end, the last up rate was 50 basis points for Europe and Britain and only 25 out of the Fed, because the Fed had got ahead and now they were still catching up if they'd not fallen behind. So I call it a Bank of England error, for which they threw the politicians under the bus for. But nonetheless, it is actively destroying and chasing out money into the other areas. You'll either stay there and be taxed 26%, then you'll pay all your national insurance on all your employees, then you'll draw a dividend, pay dividend tax, capital gains tax. They have VAT, a very high VAT. I think last time I heard it was 17 going 20. I think it might be 20. Someone in the UK, leave us a comment. Is it 20% now? I'm not sure. On VAT, which is ridiculous. It's another fifth more. So you give a quarter of your company's profits away. You add, making your profits 20% more expensive on the one hand. Then eventually you get to dividends. You're going to be paying personal tax rates that I think are around 45% at the marginal rate for anyone who runs a semi-decent business. So, I mean, you're actually working to fund states so that they can give billions to Zelensky and Biden. Why would you want to do that?
And Pfizer and Moderna.
Exactly. And trapping you into 15-minute cities. Talk to me about 15-minute cities and how the freedom of movement is slowly becoming zoned in, and how it's supposedly now soft borders just to be convenient. It's so green to act
about convenient.
Ever more draconian. I mean, how can it's people not see? Where do you think that goes?
Francis, we've just had 3 years of fuckery and people are still asleep.
I know. Country bringing that in. And if this trance agenda is really pissing you off, Dubai is a place where you won't get it because of the Islamic. They will not tolerate that garbage.
No. You've got no chance of that. You put a rainbow flag up here and watch out. there's those sorts of traditional values that exist, The other thing that actually, and I've talked about this in the past, I believe that as we go through this extraordinary chaotic period, people are going to seek out the one thing that is probably most important to most people, women in particular, and that's safety. And safety also comes with surety, and which is to say a certainty around what a place is likely to look like, how it will continue. And that's not something that the democratic type of world gives you, because every 4 years it changes. Now, sure, we've just discussed the fact that that doesn't really matter, but ostensibly, most people don't understand that, and they will be concerned. I mean, you go back and you think about, I still remember when we were in New Zealand and they were bumping into some Americans. And it was like back when Bush was in power. Oh, no, we've left because of Bush. And then there were the people like, oh, we're going to leave because of Trump. And now we're going to leave because of Biden or whatever. So you always have some level of people have an uncertainty with that new elected official. Okay. Mm. In a place like Dubai, it doesn't exist. You know what you're getting. It hasn't changed for years. It's probably not going to change. The ruling family is the ruling family. They got their laws. You know what they are. You abide or you fuck off. So that's actually, and for many Westerners, they go, I don't want to be told what to do. We tell the government what to do. It's like, no, you don't. So what you have here is actually a stability and certainty and consistency that comes with an authoritarian structure. That's going to actually become a much more attractive proposition for many people as the world goes through a chaotic restructuring.
I've often said a benign dictator with general good character traits is going to do you far better than this flawed, fake, fascist, supposed pseudo-democracy that you're being offered with this rotational teleprompter reader, you know, duct taped onto the back end, that gets spun around, that's like a beauty contest that you participate in, which is nothing more than a Big Brother telethon. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's less facade. It's almost more honest in truth of what you're actually getting in some senses. And we're quite bullish for the capital formation that's going to happen there, because there's going to be capital and industries that leave. So San Francisco, a couple of people in our group that we share that are in San Francisco and Canadians, and they're just talking about wokery marching on. You can't hire, everything's got to be ethnic minorities or trans or anything for any public posts, education posts, everything. So as this goes and people realize it, quality is the quickest to see it, and the smartest early movers are usually the brightest, and they go. And immigrants have a real zest. And generally, the immigration, America was a great country, and for a long time, South Africa, a lot of hardworking immigrants, often the over, you know, we're not talking about those on dinghies brought by Israelis into the UK and Ireland right now. We're talking about voluntary proper immigration. Are often your best workers. We're going to get that inverse, the polar, this is where people say the planet's polarity is shifting. For me, this is the polarity shifting, is the talent's going to leave, and it's going to migrate from the one side to the other side. Don't be the last one putting out the lights. That's where all the sleepy heads and the going nowhere and those that have submitted and are being humiliated are going to be left. See the trend. Act early while you still have good years, you know?
What's the difference between an immigrant and a refugee? Timing.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the latter, okay?
I love that. So, that's a good line. Yeah.
And this is going to be, you know, back, I started writing about this place in 2019, largely as a consequence, really, then, just of it being extraordinarily cheap. I mean, you could have bought then an apartment in the Burj Khalifa, which is arguably the most iconic building in the world. I wouldn't buy one there, but the point is that you could have bought one there for cheaper on a per square foot basis than Lagos, Nigeria, Sydney, Australia, Auckland, New Zealand, Phnom Penh, Cambodia. I mean, the list was endless. It's incredible. And you're looking at 10% yields on premium, nice property. So that's what got me interested, purely from an investment standpoint back then. But the dynamics of this place are they have to be capitalist. They basically, their entire structure of the way they built everything here is reliant on people and movement of capital and goods, because they don't have any oil. Abu Dhabi's got all the oil. They got about 4%. Comes in from GDP of oil. So people go, Dubai oil suck. No, there's no oil here. No oil. That's why Dubai is like Dubai. And it is conferencing, it is trade, it is tourism, it is real estate. And they're trying to make it everything. I mean, these guys are shooting for the sky. They want it to be the medical hub in the world. They want it to be the hub for blockchain. I mean, like everything. And the reality is they're not going to succeed on everything, but they're using the same level of infrastructure and strategies to allow for that. And some of that will succeed. Some of it is succeeding. And if you look at their cost base, think about running, they run this place like a business. So here's the thing. Think about in most any Western country or any country in the world, but certainly in Western countries, if you do something that you shouldn't do, then you've got to go through the court system, right? That's expensive because the state's got to pay to prosecute you, whatever it is. And then if you're found guilty, they're going to chuck you in a jail. The state's got to pay to feed you and keep you in there. This is a huge cost basis. You know what happens here? They rip your visa, put you on a plane. Done. That's it. So they don't, I mean, if you do something like murder or something else like that, you're going to go to jail. That's fine. But for many alter things where people are not doing whatever they're doing, the things they shouldn't do, they just rip their visas and send them home. So yeah. Their cost basis running the place is extraordinarily low, very, very low. And so they take all that money and they're just investing it, and they're just investing it, and they're building. I mean, there's negatives to that, in that, you know, if you come in and you're buying real estate, for example, you've got to be very careful, because there's no shortage of sand. They'll just keep building forever.
Yeah.
So you got to be focused on sort of.
But do you have talk to us on the Gulf States' property rights as well, because it's property rights that are a big concern. So one of the reasons why we predict the wokery is going to destroy, they're going to put ever more stupid laws. Can you believe I actually saw something that say that a Spanish law in Europe permitting bestiality.
They did the same in Italy. There were two. It was followed up. Yeah.
I mean,
so long as the animal doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. Now, how do you determine that? And I mean, it's who's driving a law? Who's gone to work and said, the most important thing I need to do is to give another human a right to bang an animal? I mean, these guys are pervert, invert, absolute disgusting. And to have some flaky legalese about, well, not injuring, any form of insertion of that variety into it. It kills me. But anyway, without taking us too deep into the gutter, that whole woke festery and all of that people are being permitted and being submitted to this carnage that is clearly, as I call it, the Sabbatean Frankist agenda, which is mockery. I don't have to sit and watch a TV show that is self-mockery of me. I just switch it off and go somewhere else. And you want to be in a place where that doesn't exist. You don't have news feed bumping this in. You can laugh at it from afar. And other people are being strapped to this day in, day out. They'll have CNN. And even if you avoid mainstream medias, which both of us do, but every now and then you need to see what's the new lie, you still have to bump into it. And so in essence, you have good property rights there. And I think the rule of law is dissipating. So one of the reasons America's stock market has a premium is, okay, first world talent, good intelligence, good supply, scale of smart people, you know, all these original things, rule of law, English language, law system, pretty much based on the quasi-British system developed out, IP protection, various other things. What the woke festery is doing is inverting law. It's no longer meritocracy. It's how many trans people do you have on the board, how many females, how many ethnics, how many whatever. Competence is secondary, etc. So obviously you get significant loss of standards and reduced performance. The merit, high merit people will migrate out, and then you start to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more woke you go, you outwoke each other, and that's the way you go forward.
Yeah.
And then eventually, as I say, you've got to be married to a dog practicing bestiality and a trans by whatever to get promoted. So the whole concept is, while they want to do that absolute perversion show, they lose all form of competence. And what you get is...
All it does is it accelerates the collapse.
Decline. That's right. So that's why I say, be first, don't be last. The trend is bad. And you'll be shocked at the rate of decline. And you don't want to be hitting pension age and no longer in your best of your time when you're in peak collapse.
But what you just discussed there, actually, there's a flip side to that as well, right? The smart people, the people that have values leave. And then they'll come to places like this, and that is an acceleration in the same manner where it brings more and more people. I mean, I'm just one of my best buddies here. I just had dinner with last night. So like, he's just bought an asset management company, right, from Luxembourg. And they're shipping all of the people out. Yeah, because they were servicing Russian clientele. So that's why they had to shut down and anyway. So there is, I don't know how many staff, 50, 100 staff, whatever the hell it is, that are all now moving from Europe out here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I was going to get to that part. So go where the future talent, the opportunities in the business is going. Ride the capital flows money. Do not sit in a bear market. It's like the guys that kept wanting to call bottoms in Bitcoin. I said, it's still a bear, guys. It's still a bear. I'm focusing on gold, equities, and everything else. What are you doing? And it was just bare, and they were just killing themselves, dying in an ever-growing environment. going long. If you want to go long and that's your game, go long where things are going to go up. Don't go long in things that are trending down. And it's the same with the inversion perversion of wokery. In fact, we're doing the communist states that are still fairly fresh with the effect of communism are resisting. It'd be almost better to be in East Europe and Russia than America. The trend is better. I'm not saying the life standard now is comparable, sure, but in time, you will watch.
Yeah, but everything gets priced. So let's say your living standard in the UK is higher than, I don't know, let's just take, say, Bulgaria, right, or whatever. Or a better one, Armenia. So, fine, living standards are higher. But what's the cost of that? So what is it, you know, for example, and I wrote about this the other day. I mean, we talk about the 15-minute city. So take Oxford. I took Oxford, and then I compared it to Antalya in Turkey.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of these places is locking you down, 15-minute cities. And $1 million buys you a bloody shitty little box. And the other place, $1 million in Antalya. And then you look at the crime rates. The crime rates are higher in Oxford. Because people, here's the thing, Westerners think that they live in the safest blah, blah, blah places, and they think that anything foreign is dangerous. It's ridiculous. And so, you know, investigate these things. Have a look and see what's going on. Go, jump on a plane while you can.
And all nations that are receiving this mails only from desperate lands, they're probably the criminal sector that are coming to be your future petty thieves. And all the talent that is leaving San Francisco, Silicon Valley to establish the Silicon Valley of Dubai, Singapore, wherever, etc., are the revolt. And the faster it goes, the faster it accelerates. Because more and more people think, well, I've run into a third person that's gone to XYZ and has left ABC.
Yeah.
In the same way people were talking about blue state to red state, you're going to actually, in time, have, there are no good states because they're going to bring the disease to the red states. That's the game of breaking your system.
And the only way we'll ever have that
here in Texas, you know, we'll never have that here. And I go, no, just give them time. You will. I've said that about countless things. I need to watch it happen. The media, the relentless march of this agenda is relentless. You may as well go now where there is going to be that level of establishment. Don't be lost and take the big step early. Don't do the little steps because then you keep giving ground all the time and having to move multiple times. It would be much better you do the one move once.
This is my line in the sand. Oh, no. It's a bit uncomfortable. But this one. Oh, but, and look, to be fair, that's partly the mistake Putin's made. Ever since World War II, you know, the line in the sand kept getting moved.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that there wasn't an ability to actually have a line in the sand because they didn't have the economic might or the military might back in the 90s and the early 2000s to actually do anything about it. So all they could do was bitch and moan and make their concerns heard. But you know, that's
well, the Gorbachev agreement is what you're referring to, where they said NATO will go no further.
Not 1 inch past all their actual words.
And he's repeated it many times.
Every single year they kept moving closer.
And which is why you said you were watching the CNN TV and Russia's war on Ukraine was being put, and you could easily have just said America and NATO's a war on Russia, where we've
and you could be running that as a headline ever since Gorbachev.
Yeah,
every day.
Yeah, and it's still unchanged. That's right. They have to be the boogeyman. Chris, this has been awesome. Final thoughts on any topic of your choice, and also how people can find you if they wish to engage with your fund. That is positioning for the long term. By the way, I'm not just a trader. I'm an investor and positioner for the long term as well. I think you need that foundation of slow dough is the best dough. The fast dough goes fast in and fast out. Slow dough is the best dough. Nothing like getting 20%, 15% a year and a blowout 30% a year. How's funds performance generally been, by the way, so far, given that there's a lot more upside?
We've done well since inception. Last year was our shittiest year. But we punched out about 15 which, given the markets, was just what happened.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And the markets and the bond had the worst year since 1770.
Yeah, again, like I said at the start, just know what not to be in. Like, I mean, the biggest part of this stuff is just steering clear of what is obviously dangerous for you. Stay away from the dangerous stuff. So, so now we've done okay. I mean, this year is, I don't want to say it, you end up jinxing things, but it's off to a rocketing start, but we'll see what happens. Look, ultimately, I don't even like talking about short-term gains because, you don't want to, I'm not a marketer for starters, but secondly, I look at this stuff, Francis, and I go, we got so much shit in front of us. I can't be wasting my time trying to figure out, or you're not wasting, it's the wrong word. I can't be using my time to figure out what's going to happen in the next few months, or what the Fed's going to do here, or what's the payroll numbers going to be, or any of that sort of stuff. I'm like, we have huge trends in motion, and
macro.
The risk to getting this wrong is truly asymmetric. It's really dangerous. And I'm not saying that just, I'm not the, the guy who tries to, fear-driven or hypey. No, like, this is just reality. We have, and look, we have it every roughly 100 years. We have these cyclical massive events. We're here. I kind of wish that we weren't to some extent because it sucks, but you've played the card. Those are the cards we've been dealt. We've got to play them. So, we look out like 5 years and I'm like, I need to try and be positioned for where I think we need to be in 5 years. And then I constantly, every day, reanalyze and see if I'm on track, see if my assumptions are correct, second guess all of my thinking, and then you try and guide the portfolio accordingly. So,
where do people find them?
So our publication is Capitalist Exploits.
Yeah,
they can go on there, and then for qualified investors, if that's your shtick and your thing, that's glenorkeycapital.net.
glenorkeycapital.net, excellent.
Yeah, and then just to be clear on this podcast, we're SEC registered and all that sort of stuff, so none of this that we've been talking about should be taken with a pinch of salt. So just ignore us and.
Exactly. Purely entertainment. We've had a good gag and a laugh. We're all high as kites and we're drunk at the time. Excellent. Chris McIntosh.